Well, thank you very much, Scott, for those kind words about our relationship together. I'd like to tell you a story. In 1954, in the summer, I was in Germany in the United States Army during the Korean War. I'd been drafted. I had fulfilled a mission in Germany, gone home, got married, and then was sent back to Germany instead of Korea, like most of the young men that were in my basic training. One day, I might say to begin with that I had made corporal. That's as high as a draftee gets to go during that period of time. All of any other advancements or ranks that were given to the regular Army people who had enlisted. And so our branch in Heidelberg of about 70 young men and some of their wives was consisted of a huge number of corporals and Fulberg colonels. It in Heidelberg was the headquarters of USER, so there were a number of officers there. So we were all corporals or colonels, one or the other. One day, my company commander, the company I was in was a heavy equipment repair and maintenance company in Sutzingen, Germany, just outside of Heidelberg. We had wonderful barracks and a huge shop where they repaired the D9s and cranes and heavy equipment, engineer boats that they had on the Rhine and things of that nature. It was a big outfit. I happened to, for some reason, the way the Army works, I happened to be the head of a section of nine men, all of who were PFCs and trained in various aspects of repairing special electrical devices, such as sniper scopes and mine detectors and things of that nature, and generators. One day, our company commander called me in, and he said, "Nixon, you and I are in big trouble. I just received a call from our battalion commander who had just received a call from the from the commanding generals of USER and 7th Army. We were part of 7th Army. That they had a unit up in the Black Forest of which they would not discuss any particulars that can't get their generators to work. And the commanding generals, having received orders from the Pentagon that by tomorrow night, those generators would be working." You know how the Army works. It isn't they hope they'll work. It is that they will work. In any event, he said to me, "This buck has been passed down, and now, Nixon, it stops with you." And I said, "Captain, what's going on?" He says, "They can't get the generators to work. And it's critical. And you are to go up there tomorrow morning and have them working by tomorrow afternoon." And I said, he says, "Whatever you need, we'll get for you." And I said, "Captain, I don't, you know, we've repaired a few generators here, but are you serious?" And he says, "Let me tell you, my career is dependent on what you do. And I want that letter in my record of commendation and not condemnation." And I said, "Well, do what I can. So he got in, he gave me a map and coordinates as to where this was. It was out in the middle of nowhere in the Black Forest. And so early in the morning, we took a lunch, and I took a diesel generator or a diesel repairman with me, and myself and one of my assistants, and we took off in a 2.5-ton truck to go see what we could do. The interesting thing is that all of us were draftees. We were just young people. I think I was 20, I'd have been 23, something like that, and I was the oldest one there. In any event, we took off. Fortunately, I was an Eagle Scout and could find the coordinates. We drove up in that Black Forest on a dirt road back in the middle of nowhere, and came to a fence and gate. It was a double chain link fence with Constantine and all of the barbed wire and everything else all around it and over it and on the other side of it. We drove up to the gate, and I knew there was something haywire because the men who came to inspect us on the outside of the gate had a dog. There were three or four of them. One of them had a dog with him, and none of them had absolutely any indication of who they were. There was nothing, no stripe. All they had was their rank and two U.S. buttons up on their uniform. And I thought, that's sure strange. And it was even stranger because they were all armed. And more strange than that was that all of their weapons had live ammunition in them. Now, for those of you who've been in the service, you know that you never get live ammunition. I was told I had occasion to escort prisoners once in a while, and they gave me a .45 and a helmet and all the stuff and a big thing around my arm telling who I was and what I was doing, and they handcuffed me to the prisoner, and I was to escort him to another location. And they gave me this .45 and absolutely no ammunition for it. And I thought, my gosh, what am I supposed to do? We never had ammunition. We go on guard duty. There was never any live ammunition given. The only time we ever had live ammunition out of our armory was when we went to qualify. In any event, so this was a very unusual thing. They told us to get out of the vehicle, which we did, and they spread-eagled us. They patted us down, make sure we didn't have anything we shouldn't. They went through our vehicle and all our toolboxes and everything else. And finally, the colonel showed up, came through the gate, asked if they'd done everything they should. Yes, they did. And he escorted us personally to a big shed. And in the shed were four huge generators. Huge. They were 10 feet tall and 20 feet long. They were big diesel generators. And out of these generators went these big cords, this big around, and they went across the field and into a bunker. And the colonel said to me, "You're here to repair these generators. They just don't work. We can't get them to work. We can't get anybody from the United States, from Hobart, to come and show us. And we've got to have them running tomorrow, this afternoon." I said, "Well, okay." I said, "Can I see what kind of equipment you're using them on?" And he said, "Corporal, this is the most secure place in the world. If you ask that question again, you will be arrested." I said, "Well, okay, I won't ask that question again." And I said, he says, "There's nobody that gets into that bunker. No one without the clearance that is required." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, let's fire up the generators and let me see what happens." So we fired up the generators, and they were so noisy. I mean, diesels are noisy enough. But these made so much noise, I couldn't believe it. Now, I don't know what I'm talking about when I say this next thing, but I found out later on that these were two-cycle diesel engines. And it was described to me, the noise that they made was described to me as a two-cycle lawnmower multiplied by 100. And so we fired it up. I looked at all the meters. The amp meter was at zero. And this was a three-phase, 600-cycle generator. And I thought to myself, the only place I've ever seen the cycles that high were in aircraft generators. And I thought to myself, you know what this is? This is an illegal missile outfit. Why would they have a 600-cycle generator this big? Any event, I didn't say anything to anybody about that. So the cycle meter was one of those old kind of reed cycle meters. And these reeds would vibrate at the cycles of that the generator was putting out. The voltages were all correct. It was three-phase. We had everything just right. The 600-cycle reed was wiggling just like it should, I thought. And so we fired it up. I threw the breaker, and the whole thing started to lug down. And everything dimmed, and then the breakers snapped open, and Big Arcs came, and he said, "That's exactly what happens. Now fix it." This was the colonel. And I said to myself, you know, this job as special electrical device supervisor, that was my MOS, was given to me by not even a private first class in basic, just because I could tell him what a capacitor and a resistor was, I got this MOS. And I don't know, this brand new Hobart generator, four of them, brand new. In fact, the manifolds were still smoking, it was so darn new. Why would this thing happen? So I said to him, as the thought came to me, I need to have the manual on this generator. And he said, I don't know. He says, do you have any clearance? And I said, do I need a clearance for a generator? I said, I repair them all the time, you know, back at our unit. He said, well, we've got to have this done, so I'll give it to you. So he gave me the manual, his stamp confidential. I had confidential, everybody had confidential clearance. Any event, I went over in the corner and sat down on a barrel, and I had a word of prayer between me and Father, between Father and I. And I said, I don't know what to do. And so I opened the manual, and I started leafing through it, the electrical part. And then finally, I got to the back of the manual, and there were the specifications for the generator and the specifications for the engine. And for some reason, my eye went down to the specifications for the RPM of the engine. It's normal RPM rating, what it was supposed to operate at. I looked at that, and though it didn't come into my mind, as all of you probably know, the RPMs determine how fast the armature goes in the generator determines the cycles. And so I thought to myself, the thought came into my mind, we are not, we probably do not have that generator operating at the proper speed. With that insight, I got up, closed the book, went over to my diesel mechanic, and I said, I want you to get your RPM thing, your tachometer. I want you to get it, and it was a manual one, you know, with a rubber thing on the front where you can put it against a shaft and see what the RPMs are. I want you to go up there in front, and I want you to put that on the shaft. All Army things at that time, the crankshaft ended up outside where you could get at it. In the old days, we used to crank our old Fords and everything else by hand from time to time, and that's what I went and asked him to put these RPM or his tachometer on. Then I said, you holler and let me know when we get to this RPM. And so I turned the engine or the generator back on, and I started cranking up. There's a handle there for the throttle, cranking up the speed of this generator. And it got noisier, and it started vibrating, and it was terrible, and it got to the point I had to get somebody to be between him and me so that I could hear what the RPMs were, because we had to yell so loud over the noise of the generator. I cranked it up, finally got to the specified RPMs. The engine was running a little better, a little smoother, but it was making such a racket. As I did that, as I approached those RPMs, all of a sudden, the cycle meter started vibrating. The little indicator started moving. And when I got to the RPMs that it was there, I had 600 cycles. I told the colonel, I yelled in his ear, I'm going to turn it on. He went to the bunker, told him that we were going to try it. He was absolutely out of his mind. He says, this thing's falling apart. This is terrible. Do you know what you're doing? And I said, I thought to myself, well, he signed for this generator, not me. So what the heck? So I threw the breaker, and all of a sudden, people started pouring out of the bunker. And they were jumping around and yelling, giving a high sign, the whole thing. It worked. We left the unit with the colonel just ecstatic and patting us on the back. And we were the heroes. By the time I got back to our unit, this information had gotten back to the company commander. He came out with one of the lieutenants and that type of thing, and everybody was just big smiles and happy. And he said, how did you do that? And I said, well, it was interesting. And he, out of all of that, against all of, was all of the, not regulations, but all of the policy of the Army at that time, they promoted me to Staff Sergeant, which made it so that Loretta could come join me in a more comfortable way. And as you know, the sergeants of the Army are the elite. We had our own mess. We had our own rooms and everything. It was just absolutely wonderful. I'd died and gone to heaven almost. But in any event, I could have answered that captain that it had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with the insight I had. And the moment I sat there in the corner trying to decide what to do. The reason I tell you that story is because though I wasn't knowledgeable so much about electricity, I'd had some training in it, I was prepared to recognize what that insight meant and to apply it. It's the same as what Einstein, standing on the balcony looking with his friend at all of the clocks down in the town, looking at those clocks and thinking and receiving an insight that something about time had to do with space. There was something about time that was important. Einstein had prepared himself to be able to receive the information, the insight, to give us what has been one of the great insights and things that we have received in this generation, theory of relativity. All because he received the insight and then developed it through other insights in the next 2 years and developed what was necessary for us to know and receive the information. It was the same with Mozart. He heard the music. He had the insight of music. It was the same with Newton and his proverbial apple. Kepler, Michelangelo. And even in our day, the great scientists that we've learned to revere and call genius, Millikan, with his oil drop. The insight came to Millikan. He knew, he had in his heart what he knew had to happen. He made that oil drop experiment work. He may even have fudged a little bit to make it work. But as you know, under the scientific method, other people have to develop it. Fortunately, he was right, and others were able to duplicate it. He received the Nobel Prize for that. All because of insights that they had, and mostly because of the fact that all of these people had in common the preparation to be able to act on the insights that they had received. Mozart, Handel, Millikan, Newton, all of them had these insights and were prepared to use them. If I had music running in my head, I would have absolutely no idea how to put those little stems and dots. Some dots, you know, that are hollow and some that are full, and some had flags on them, and they put them up against those bar things, and they have curlicues and all. You know what I'm talking about. I would have no idea how to do that. But Mozart was prepared. He went through the effort. May I suggest to you that you've gone through the effort of preparing yourself to receive the great insights. These men have all been called geniuses. And I wonder if the real definition of a genius is being able to prepare themselves such that when the insights come, that they are able to act on them. So may I just give you my single little wish and vision for the computer for family history. I need a computer like God has. I need a computer that will do what I mean more than what I say. Loretta has a little thing that she does to solve this problem. Yeah, I'm going to, honey. She has a way of doing this. What she does is sit at the keyboard, and if she hits something and you get that peculiar Windows sound, you know, like you are illegal. She couldn't live with that. You just performed an illegal act. She says, I'm an honest person. I've never done anything illegal in my life. But her solution is to hit keys until it does what she wants. Just hit them. And then eventually, oh, all kinds of things come up on the screen, but okay. All right. I need a computer that will do what I want and not what I put in the keyboard. I need a computer that will come to me rather than me going to it. I need a computer that will anticipate my needs, that will know me and will perform what I need. Don Quixote, of course. Maybe there never will be. Maybe we'll have to wait until Father will let us play with his computer. But nevertheless, that is the goal that I give you. That's the vision that I give you. All the steps from now till we achieve that will be given to us by insights. So I say to you and pray that you will prepare yourself in such a way that when those insights come towards this lofty goal, that you will be prepared to receive them and act on them, so that the computer will not be something that we can use, but something that will be useful to us. And I share that with you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.